Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Jeremy. So Jeremy, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Jeremy Julian, CRO for Custom Business Solutions, and I'm also the founder and host of the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Based on that, you can probably tell what Custom Business Solutions does. We do restaurant technology. And so I have a podcast that kind of thought leadership in that same space.
Awesome. So can you just share with our audience really how you got into the restaurant technology space in the first place?
I was born into the industry, second generation in the industry. My father started selling cash registers in the late 80s, and I started working there in the mid 90s while I was in high school. And then I spent summers there as a kid. And then in college, I was working there, and I started full time in 96. So I've been there for over 25 years. In the interim, I also worked in restaurants, waiting tables and all of that kind of stuff in high school and really even in middle school. I used to get dropped off at the sandwich shop used to get to make sandwiches because it was a friend of the family.
Makes sense. Let's just talk more about restaurant technology, because like you mentioned, right, you know, you used to sell cash registers. Obviously, now in 2023, it's, you know, technology has really evolved. So what does that look like over the years compared to what you were doing, you know, when you first started, just compared to now?
Well, I joke about it, and I know it's always embarrassing when I go sit down with a new team member and I've been in the industry longer than they've been alive. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of embarrassing, because they're like, yeah, I'm 23. And so when we started, it was DOS-based, you know, green screens, and they were all serial cables. There was no networking. Really started when it was all DOS, and then it went from DOS to Windows 3.1.1 and kind of moved its way up. And you would dial in with these 2400 baud modems, so it would take forever to repaint this green screen to fix somebody's problem. I remember the first time we had a printer print a remote ticket, because again, back when I first started, you would put the paper in and then you'd hang the ticket in the window and the cooks would go make it, versus being able to send something on a cash register and have it go to the kitchen, and you didn't have to run between the kitchen and the cash register. It was like that was remarkable success. That was like super exciting, and that was early days. Now it's voice AI ordering, and I mean, I'm sure we'll get into some of that stuff, but yeah, lots and lots of technology advancements over the last close to 30 years that I've been doing it.
So can you just talk more about the business today? Like, what exactly is the business model, and what type of restaurants are you serving?
We go after multi-unit restaurants is really where, so the business started at selling cash registers. We then became a value-added reseller for a well-known product. It was actually a product that wasn't well-known back when we started selling it in the early 90s. And then we helped build it up along with a myriad of dealers across the country. And then about 10 years ago, we built our own software to sell to multi-units. So restaurants that have more than one property, really more than five properties, and we go after their corporate headquarters and try and show them the value proposition of why we can help save them money, help make them more money, help them, you know, reduce their risk, help them increase their customer satisfaction through the use of technology and all of the things that go along with that.
So is it like mostly like fast food restaurants, or like what type of, does it matter depending on?
Yeah, we serve all of them, but at the end of the day, where we thrive and what our, I guess what I call the center of the bullseye is multi-unit table service restaurants that are corporately owned and operated. That is like our ideal customer, anywhere between probably 15 to 200. So clients like here in Texas, the Pappas Restaurant Group is one of our clients. The Landry's Group down in Houston is also a client. Cotton Patch Cafe, who's here in the Dallas market, is a client. Cheesecake Factory is a client. BJ's is a client. Outback Steakhouse is a client. And so those are like ideal clients for us. Cheddar's. Those would be kind of the center of the bullseye, because they're corporately owned, casual dining, meaning the table service. Again, we also support places like Torchy's and other places that might be counter service. But what is the center of the bullseye, and where do we really just kill it? It's in that kind of table service. They need to have a better customer experience, and they understand the need for having technology that's solid and does what it needs to do.
So can you just talk more about the features? Like, what separates you from your competition? Like, why would somebody want to use your product compared to someone else's?
There's really, we talk about our three uniques, being that we're very knowledgeable about the industry. Most of our people have been you know, 20 plus years within the industry. So we understand we're available, meaning you can get a hold of me. You can get a hold of our CRO. Our CEO, you can get a hold of our CTO. Our numbers are posted on the website. Like, we're accessible. Our entire team is accessible. We believe in deep levels of partnership to help the brand fulfill their value proposition out to the market. And then the third thing that we talk about is most point of sale companies, most technology companies say, you know, kind of the old Henry Ford, you can have any color as long as it's black. Whereas we're like, oh, do you need it gray? Do you need it white? Do you need it red? We're very customizable. The name of the business is Custom Business Solutions. And from time to time, I wish it was called Out of the Box Business Solutions. But at the end of the day, the custom side of things, especially when you get into multi-units, they need more. And so, again, part of that value proposition is we'll support any credit card processor. Most of them come, you know, baked in Square, Clover, Toast. You have to have their credit card processor. You don't have an option to go use somebody else's credit card processor. Whereas we say, you know what, if you want to use your own processor, you're welcome to. You want to use your own back office, you're welcome to. You want to use your own online ordering, you're welcome to. You want to use your own third-party delivery, you know, company, DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats, you're welcome to. We welcome that because we understand the value of choice and being able to control your own destiny and control the customer experience is very critical to being competitive in today's restaurant market.
So when you're implementing a new register, you know, like the hardware, you're customizing the softwares that they want within the register for, you know, just depending on location, depending on which company that you're working with, correct?
Absolutely. And every restaurant, while it is a manufacturing plant, we call the point of sale really the ERP of the center of the store. It is the engine that makes things go. It's the way that stuff gets sent to the kitchen. And truthfully, some people like it to look one way on the point of sale, another way on the website, and a third way in the kitchen, because the kitchen staff is used to seeing CHK STP for chicken strips, whereas the guest is never going to understand what CHK, you know, STK is, or what, you know, whatever those acronyms might be. And so, and a lot of times the kitchen staff might have been trained on a system that only could get 8 characters, so they had to shrink it down to 8 characters. Today's modern age, it's a lot easier, but for the most part, that's a big piece. Some places like to have kitchen videos. Some people like to have curbside dining. Some people like to have kiosks. We need to be able to customize those things to match the business proposition, because at the end of the day, even though you're going there to get your experience, is different. You go into a BJ's, they order tableside from a tablet. You go into a Cheesecake Factory, they don't. You go into a Texas Roadhouse, they've got the little Ziosk thing there that you've got to integrate to, and the Ziosk has to be able to pay differently, and it's got to show up at the point of sale. So depending upon the brand's value proposition out to the market, we have to customize the solution to meet those needs.
Makes sense. So what is the biggest challenge that you're facing now in the business?
It's the fact that most people in our industry that are in established brands, which is what we go after, have not changed their technology stack in anywhere between 15 and 25 years. And so they want everything that they have in their 25-year-old software that's had 25 years worth of enhancements specific to their needs, but they want it with modern tool sets, and they want it for free. They want it for cheap. So you're either really feature rich and then it gets expensive, or you're feature shy and it's less expensive. But now they say, well, I can't. I mean, a local brand that we're working with has only got 11 units, local brand here in Dallas, but they absolutely said, we will not move forward unless you can integrate with our HRIS system, because the lady that runs payroll can't do her job unless the HRIS system that is a one-off HRIS system based here will support it, because they want to change the point of sale, but it needs to integrate with the HRIS system. So now we're, you know, 6 months past where we need to be, because she needs her HRIS system integration. And I don't blame her, because she's gotten used to working with it being that way. But that's really the biggest challenge to scaling, especially when you get to these enterprises. They're not willing to take less than what they have today, which includes, I mean, our average installation has 8 integrations. So we're integrated with 8 different platforms, to DoorDash, to Uber Eats, to Olo, to a kiosk manufacturing, to a digital menu board company, to an HR system, to a payroll system. So they've got 8 different integrations. And so we have to check all of those boxes before they're willing to move forward.
Makes sense. So what is the role of AI when it comes to the software now in 2023?
It has not hit our market. I would say that restaurants and retail are historically laggards. What I will say is ML, less AI, machine learning, has taken a big portion, and it's taking a bigger space in our market. We're now at a place where we built a logarithm that takes 5 years worth of thousands of transactions worth of kitchen data to give you or the consumer on the web within a 2-minute accuracy how long your basket is going to take from that kitchen at that time. If any of the listeners out there, you've done an online order, they tell you it's a very straight logarithm that says when we get 5 orders, it's 20 minutes. When we get 6 orders, it's 23 minutes. So when you get 7 orders, it's a very straight logarithm that they put out there. And so you might go on your favorite restaurant's website and not order from them because you recognize it's going to take an hour and a half based on what the kitchen volume is. But you might want a chicken Caesar salad. And that's a 6-minute cook time. Based on the basket, it's going to estimate based on that kitchen staff and that kitchen's production that it really is only going to take 6 minutes for that chicken Caesar salad. And they might be able to increase that order, not only the order quoting accuracy, which increases guest satisfaction, but it also creates an ability to have significant more throughput. The flip side of that is with that data, machine learning data, you'll be able to turn off the kitchen or throttle down the kitchen that says, hey, Dan's going to order this food. I need to give him a longer lead time so that he's not disappointed. So he doesn't show up and he's sitting in the lobby waiting for 20 minutes for his food.
Makes sense. So what is your strategy now to acquire new customers? Obviously, you've been in the business for a long time, but how do you get in front of more people?
90%. I mean, the restaurant vertical is the second largest employer in the United States. And at the same point, so there's, estimated 650,000 restaurants in the United States. That number spans anywhere from 600,000 to 700,000, but still it's a lot of restaurants. And at the same time, everybody knows everyone. And so 90% of our opportunities come through referral. Take care of your existing client, especially in the casual dining upscale market. Everybody knows everybody. I was telling one of our team members this story just yesterday. There was a one-off restaurant in the middle of the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. It was a one-off Jewish deli in Northridge, California. And they were a client of ours. They happen to have a technology problem. They're on the phone with our support center dealing with their technology problem. And our CEO gets a call from the president of the Cheesecake Factory, which at that point was about $1.2 billion in sales, because he was having lunch there and he knows the owner of that Jewish deli because he goes to have lunch there twice a week. And he's like, go figure out how to get these guys taken care of. And so those types of stories happen all the time where you're like, how are these two people connected? But at the end of the day, as big as the industry is, everybody knows everybody and they talk. So you've got to take care of those people. The second strategy that we're employing is because everybody has these, all of our solutions have an average of 8 different integrations. We've got to talk to those integration partners to say, are we your preferred vendor to refer in when somebody calls you and says, hey, I'm looking to replace my point of sale? Because if we're not, we're not going to get that lead and ultimately not get that sale.
Makes sense. So in terms of these connections, like, do you guys have lots of conferences that you attend? How do you nurture these connections and I guess re-engage with the people? Because it's one thing to know lots of people, but I feel like often when you know lots of people, you can just forget about this person or that person. So how do you really make sure that the people that that you're keeping, top of mind so that when they do need your solution, that they're thinking of you?
So there's a 3-part strategy that we've implemented over the last number of years. We've got the critical trade shows. So as silly as it may be, still people want to see people face to face. And there's a few big trade shows that everybody goes to. If you don't go to this one, you go to that one. If you don't go to that one, you go to this one. And so we try and make sure that we're at those 4 to 5 trade shows that all of those people are at, so that at a minimum, we're in front of them. We're stopping, saying hello, connecting them and solving a problem for them that they might not even know that they have by connecting them to somebody else. So that's number one. The second is constantly getting our own clients to talk about the successes that they have through press releases, case studies, white papers, and such, and putting it out there. And then we've got a 15-month nurture campaign where we're constantly adding value into their business. Did you realize that there's new taxation laws in the state of California? Did you realize that there's a new beverage tax in Chicago? And here's how to solve that problem. Did you know that machine learning might be able to help your kitchen ticket times? And so we're constantly educating them about the things that are out there. I would say the fourth thing that I do, and I know I said there was only 3, but there's a fourth thing that I do is our CTO, myself, our CEO, we go to other conferences that aren't specific to customers and go do research. In January, I'll be in New York at a show that has 100,000 people at it. It's a grocery and retail show. It's not specifically restaurants, but I'm going to look and say, what are grocers and what is Walmart doing? Is what is Kroger doing? And what is Whole Foods doing? So that I can take that technology and bring it back to the restaurants. I sat with one of our brands with our CEO and said, what's your biggest problem? And they told me about food accuracy. 75% of their complaints came from food accuracy. DoorDash, Uber Eats, Grubhub, online ordering, the food doesn't get to the guest properly. Why is that? The staff member doesn't read the ticket right. When you're sitting in the dining room, really easy to solve. But when you're taking it home or you're on DoorDash, now there's this guest recovery problem. You get it. You're allergic to mustard. They put mustard on your burger. You no longer want to eat it. They do it a second time. You're never coming back to that brand. You're in the dining room. They'll cook you another burger. They'll know that it's bad. You'll fix it. So we're like investigating an AI solution that's computer vision to look at that cheeseburger to say the order said no mustard. Did Jeremy as the cook put mustard on that burger to be able to deliver that for them? Are we selling that solution? Are we creating that solution? Absolutely not. But I went out and found something and I turned him onto it and said, is this going to solve your problem, to be able to solve those problems for him? Because those types of deep levels of partnership and relationship ultimately are going to get us the next deal, because that CEO is going to talk to his buddy who's also a CEO and say, you got to take care of these guys because you got to call these guys because they're going to take care of you when you've got a problem.
That's amazing. So in terms of these nurturing campaigns, is it email newsletters that you're sending out? Is it via LinkedIn posts? Like how do you really nurture your prospects?
I have a philosophy, and it goes back to Donald Miller and the story brand framework. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but Donald Miller, he wrote a book called Building a Story Brand, and he has a whole framework, but it's like the customer is the hero of the story. And so you've got to continue to be adding value to them. You're the guide. You're the Yoda to their Luke Skywalker. And so our job is to be the guide to help that person that's receiving that email so that they don't turn it off. And then after you've delivered enough value, which is typically 3 to 4 messages about the value, then you ask for an appointment. So it's value, 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 sell. Value, 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 engage. Value, 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 engage. And getting data that's relevant to them and automating that process so that it's hitting you on a regular basis, so that you know, because the buying cycles for POS are 7 to 10 years at the earliest. And so you're not buying point of sale every year. You're not buying, you know, it's no different than buying a house or buying a car. There are certain sales cycles that are going to continue to happen. So we've got to be top of mind when things go down, when their current provider goes out of business, when their current provider gets acquired. We've got to be their top of mind that they say, oh, I look like that guy and I've got a problem that's big enough for me to pick up the phone and call them. And that's our desire to do that. Those same messages that go out to those people. And then the other thing that we talked about is press releases and case studies. Those do get shared by our leadership team on social, and you know, primarily LinkedIn is where we do those things. But it's amazing. Again, you post something on LinkedIn, you're connected to these people. They're like, oh, I look just like, you know, this brand. We should talk because I've got a problem here.
So what's the pricing structure for the system? Is it like a monthly subscription that they're paying at for the implementation, or what does that look like?
We've got two primary business models, the purchase and SaaS. So everything has a recurring revenue component to it. It's the fuel that drives the engine that is the business. And so that's been a huge transition for our industry over the last 10 years that everybody, you know, no different than Netflix or Microsoft Office or Google Suite. You know, it used to be, you know, you buy it for $1,000 and then it's free for the, you know, next 5 years or whatever. We've gone the same way that everybody else has gone. And we have a purchase in a SaaS model, which is it's a higher CapEx and a lower OpEx. And then we have a full OpEx model where you essentially rent your point of sale on a monthly basis, and you don't have to pay for maintenance. You don't have to pay for upgrades. You know, if the device goes end of life, we just replace it for you, and you pay one monthly fee, and it's bundled in with the software, hardware support and service for that hardware on a monthly basis. The term on that is a little bit longer. You know, it's a 36-month term versus a 1-year term. But at the end of the day, you have a white glove service. We take care of everything. You can focus on making the best burgers in the world while we focus on building the best point of sale in the world.
Makes sense. So I'm just on average, like, what is your current monthly revenue? Like, what are you looking to get to in 2024?
Our ARPU numbers, annual revenue per unit, our monthly revenue per unit is around 240 is what our average is today. Our goal is to get up to $400 per unit in revenue. One of our big competitors that's publicly traded is somewhere in the $1,500 to $1,700 per month, but they also bundle in credit cards and they're bundling that into their number. And so, you know, but our goal, honestly, it has to deliver value. It's not just about a number. It's about how much value are we driving and how long are we keeping those customers? Because lifetime value, you know, whether I'm charging you $200 a month, $300 a month, $500 a month, it doesn't matter if I'm not delivering value back to you. My goal is that they should want to continue to buy the system over and over again because we're delivering so much value that they would be remiss if it went away.
What would you say is like the biggest obstacle preventing you from getting to that 400 ARPU goal?
Just them adopting the services. The buying cycles for all of the things that we provide are not the same. The online ordering provider, the credit card provider, the point of sale provider, the kiosk provider, the digital venue board provider, the payroll provider, all of those are services and offerings that we have. But right. The buying cycles and the clientele that are buying them within a brand are not always the same. One might be marketing, one might be payroll, one might be, you know, operations. Those people, one, aren't buying on the same cycles. So it's just waiting till that contract ends because they're not willing to forego that contract because there's not enough value to moving it over. And once it does, then we're going to continue to drive that and grow that. The other thing I would say is because the pandemic hit the casual dining space so significantly, most of them have been so gun shy to buy anything. So clearly, a fast food restaurant is smaller in footprint than a casual dining restaurant. And so the ARPU on a casual dining restaurant is higher than what we've been able to sell the last 5 years. Most people in the casual dining space haven't been spending a whole lot of money because of the pandemic and kind of the way the world was. Now they're finally starting to starting to open those pocketbooks up to be able to buy things. But unfortunately, just the scale and the adoption curve is less, not even less. It's just not as accelerated because we've had a few years of selling into the quick service space where the quick service or counter service space, whereas the table service space has been slightly, you know, I guess less open to investment as of now.
Makes sense. And just to wrap, so what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started your career?
I mean, and it sounds a bit cliche, but I think the people that you meet on the way up are the same people that you're going to meet on the way down. At the end of the day, you're going to end up seeing those same people. And so be humble, work hard, continue to learn every day, continue to grow. Now in my mid-40s, I recognize how ignorant I was in my mid-20s and how I thought I had it all figured out and how much more I figured out as I've grown and had more, gray hairs in my goatee here. You know, so from that perspective, that those would be two pieces of advice I'd give just about anybody.
Awesome. And if somebody watching this wanted to reach out, do you mind sharing your website or your best way to get in contact with?
Yeah, so it's cbsnorthstar.com, restauranttechnologyguys.com. If you Google Jeremy Julian, I've got a YouTube channel. I've got, very active on LinkedIn, relatively active on Facebook, but Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. But those modicums I do live on quite a bit. But if you just go search Jeremy Julian, I promise you'll find me out there somewhere because I've got all of those social media things and as well as producing content every week.
Awesome. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for your time and we're rooting for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. Bye.